Yes. Yes, Cymru Radio. Yes. Radio Free Wales.
Yes. Hello, Shumai. Welcome to Radio Yes Cymru, another edition on Zoom and on your favourite podcast platform. So I'm speaking to Dav Smith, who's a Yes Cymru director, lives in Leamington Spa, family from the Treod area, the Powys area, but a keen supporter of independence, an engineer, and I'm very much looking forward to speak to you tonight, David. Thanks for coming over.
No, thank you for having me. Yeah, looking forward to discussing some interesting stuff.
Yeah, so we want to discuss the economy and the economics of independence and the currency and stuff like that. So the important stuff, the kind of questions people are always asking me, and I'm sure always asking you. And as you told me before we started this conversation online, you know, yours as an engineer, as a scientist, you're looking for facts. You're looking for stuff that backs things up. So you're not a head in the clouds like I am. You're looking for facts and things to prove each other. So, I mean, we go into the question, the same question I asked to Dr. John Ball a few months ago on the Radio Yes Cymru podcast. You know, can Wales afford independence, Dav Smith?
Absolutely. Yeah, there's no reason why we can't. There are dozens of countries that have similar or smaller GDP, countries that have similar or smaller population, and countries that have similar and smaller GDP per capita, and really, you know, the state that we're in at the moment, mainly how it's kind of measured at the moment as Wales is part of the union, they look at GVA, which is gross value added, and so our GVA is basically the same as our GDP. It wouldn't be called GDP until we left. For all intents and purposes, it's the same thing. And our GVA is low, mainly because we don't have the opportunity to invest in our own country. And the people whose responsibility it is to invest in our country, in its manufacturing, in its services, even in the agriculture, and in emerging technologies and things like that, the country who's responsible for it are not doing it. So.
So I'm going to ask this question because, I mean, we're going to go into that later on. And you know, the question I get, and people say, okay, Wales can afford independence because essentially any country can.
Yeah.
It depends. Can you afford independence on the level of the well-being and, you know, the health of, you know, the services which we have now? So can Wales afford independence? Yes, because you know, South Sudan can afford independence. I wouldn't want to live in South Sudan, but it can afford independence, you know.
Yes.
So the question is, would Wales be poorer with independence or richer? Maybe that's the question people ask, especially maybe in the short term after independence. So how would you answer that kind of question?
So in the short term after independence, I think it's reasonable to expect an economic hit, and that would be because of the changing nature of things. You know, all of a sudden we're this new country, got to get ourselves on our own two feet, and we've got to decide what we're going to do as a country economically moving forward. But there's absolutely no reason why it would stay in that situation as long as the people at the helm of that new country manage it in such a way that we improve on the base level that we're at now. So, you know, if we were to have an independence referendum tomorrow, say, and somebody asked me to predict what would happen to the pound in its value, what would happen to Wales's GDP over the next, I don't know, month, or you know, what would happen to purchasing power and things like that, there would be a market shock. Absolutely, there'd be a massive market shock. However, there's no reason that would be sustained with the correct management. And the problem is as we've seen with the Conservatives in power in the last 12 years, or even in just the last year and a half, I suppose you could say, since the pandemic, you know, we would take the pandemic out of it. We've got enough data points since then. You look at how Liz Truss dealt with things and how Rishi Sunak has dealt with things, and, you know, the mounting debt and terrible management of the economy from the people who are supposed to be, you know, seen as the people who run the economy, you know, the Conservatives are supposed to be the economy guys, and they're doing such a bad job of it. We can do better. I know we can do better. And there's plenty of people in Wales that can do better. There's plenty of people in England that can do better, for crying out loud. But you know, would there be a hit initially? I'm not going to be like a Farage and sit there and say, oh yeah, it's absolutely not going to, you know, everything will be perfect and sunlit uplands and things like that. But it gives us the opportunity to do something better than what's being done to us right now. I would say we're on a baseline right now. And when it actually comes to leaving the union, because there would be a transition period like there is with any of these agreements, then I think in that transition period, we can show and we can make sure that we're on a really good footing going forwards. And we've got investment in the right places. And we've elected people who have got a plan for Wales and how it's going to become, you know, a 21st century country, which at the moment, a lot of it isn't. And it's not, no one's fault in Wales. It's the fault of people who need to invest in the country.
Yeah. So, I mean, maybe the point I would make is that, you know, there's always economic change.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, and this happens in any case. Sometimes it's bad, like the crash in 2004. Truss is mad. Decision, yeah. You know, just a plus eight to a fringe part of the Tory party and dogma. The deindustrialization of the South Wales coal fields in the 1980s. There's always change. But with independence, for the first time ever, we would have change which is there specifically to get to the root of the problem of 700 years of extractive economy.
Exactly.
And I think that's something worth fighting for. And I would also take a look at the COVID. And I think, you know, Wales, by and large, came out of that better run than the Westminster government in Westminster. And I think a lot of people clocked that for the first time ever in their life. Not perfect. I still think there needs to be inquiry into it to hold democratic accountability to a Welsh government. That's just a basic tenet, I think, of good democracy. But I think people felt the government working through the local councils to save lots of money, working the skills the local county councils had in Wales, not giving off to the private sector. So working within our means, I think people felt, and you're being quicker off the mark to try and deal with stuff, Wales handled itself better. And I think that's a quite a good sign, I think, for how Wales would cope with independence, I think. But what we need to do in Yes Cymru and other movements supporting independence, as applied as and published a policy by Dr. Dole from Dublin. You know, we need to look at how exactly it works itself out. So maybe there could be a readjustment or something straight after independence. So the grounds where you're thinking, okay, Wales can handle independence, but we're not sort of too poor for it. What would be the sort of main reasons you come, you know, as you say, an engineer, as a scientist, you're looking at facts and looking at poetry. You know, how do you come to that decision? And maybe also looking, as being brought up in England, maybe also looking outside, you know, maybe sometimes with a different point of view to someone like myself here in Aberystwyth.
Yeah, sure. So, and that's not to put anything down on poetry. Poetry is absolutely
no, of course
well.
Not. Yeah, it's
the,
no, it's
the, why did we're that? The land of bards.
Yeah.
It's two numbers that appear in the most accurate from the UK Treasury on ingoings and outcomings from Wales. And the two key numbers are the amount of money that is spent on public services in Wales, which is essentially what a government needs to be doing anyway. And in 2019, so we are talking pre-pandemic here, but in 2019, that was £24.9 billion.
Right.
And then the other number that we need to know is the taxes and revenues that were brought in by Wales. So people who live in Wales, income tax from businesses that work in Wales, VAT, things like that. And that number was 25.3 billion, I think, or 25.4 billion off the top of my head.
Yeah.
So that, and that number, as I said in my YouTube video on Professor John Doyle's analysis of this, the amount of money that we're bringing in is more than the amount of money that we're spending on public services in Wales.
Yeah.
So that takes out, you know, so that's not including things like pensions. It doesn't include defence, and it doesn't include any kind of debt repayments on the UK debt. So yes, there's that too, but it's also, that's tax policy that is decided by the UK Parliament, not by the Welsh Parliament. We can't bring in any new taxes in Wales without, well, taxes aren't really devolved. Some of them are, but for the most part, they're not devolved. So already there, we're working to someone else's system, but the amount that we're actually paying for our public services is less than we're getting in taxes. So from
that... And I think that's the general feel I have living in Wales. I think the kind of money people actually spend it and is used in Wales, so don't think about how it looks in London when you go on holiday and see it, something down there. Yep. Think of how actually Wales runs, and I think it sort of makes sense. I mean, even a non-scientific, although I've looked at the facts as well, and I think that that's realistic. I think this idea that we're not paying enough doesn't make sense. I think if you look at the services we have, it's not fantastic. It needs to be better.
Yeah.
But it sort of matches places I've also been abroad with similar kind of, you know, standards of living and stuff like that. So, I mean, for stuff we actually get in Wales, not talking about, you know, how magnificent the mall outside Buckingham Palace looks or whatever, or the Strand, in Wales, I think it actually, that makes sense, I think, David.
Yeah. So, as I said, that doesn't include defence, and that doesn't include some big, you know, policy things like looking at debt and pensions and that sort of thing. However, you know, John Doyle goes into, in his analysis, goes into why those would perhaps change anyway. Just on defence, because one of the questions that I see quite often on Twitter is, how would you defend yourselves? First of all, the immediate question to ask that, if that's somebody from England, so from where I live on this side of the border, how are you going to defend yourselves? Well, first of all, who's going to invade us? We've only got a border with one country. Is there something you want to tell us? That would be my first question. And two, the allocated payment that the allocated amount of money that is on behalf of Wales paid for the UK defence is the equivalent of 2.6% of Wales's GDP.
Yeah, now, it's more than even NATO asking.
Yeah, that's more than NATO asking. There are, you know, there's something like a handful of countries really in the world that pay more than 2.6% on their defence, and those are countries like the USA, you know, a militaristic power. So, you know, Ireland is, I think they've recently decided that they're going to change theirs from 0.5 up to 0.8 or perhaps even 1%. But the EU average is 1.3%. So, you know, John Doyle's analysis, and where I completely agree with him on this, is that we can half the amount of money that we pay for on defence and still be at the EU average. So really, I think when it comes to defence, it's money that needs to be paid, and it's money that needs to be added to the out tray rather than the in tray. But, you know, it's not something that I think we need to worry about. There are people, you know, if me sat here, an armchair economist, somebody with engineering experience and a bit of time as a secondary school teacher can make these connections in my head of where this money can come from and how much we actually need to spend on these things, then there are, you know, hundreds of thousands of people in Wales now ready, and in future ready to be elected to make these decisions, and because they've got the expertise already. So, you know, if there's volunteers like me making these claims and having evidence to back them up, then there's certainly experts that can put forward these policies and make them a lot more, you know, put some meat on the bones.
That's it. Let's stick with a defence just for a moment, just because it does crop up as well. I wrote a book entitled "How Many Aircraft Carriers Would an Independent Wales Have?" which was a question asked to David Iwan about 2011 or something. And there's only about four countries in the world with an aircraft carrier. So, I mean, it's not something which many people can afford in any case. So, I mean, I think my personal view, Wales needs to have a viable military capability. Otherwise, it doesn't have a monopoly of violence within its own borders. And it means essentially another country does. So, I mean, I think that's something. The Irish, actually, there's a paper, the economic paper by Melin Drafod, which will link in the YouTube video for this as well as your videos. Thank Dave.
It's a good paper. Good reading.
They think this, you know, the key to the Irish spend. It is worth noting that Ireland's air defence essentially has been farmed out to the RAF, which is rather ironically. So basically, the discussion in Ireland is increasing the amount of money they pay for the military. So maybe the 0.5 is very low for them by now as well. With the issue of NATO, I personally would be in favour of staying in NATO. I know the other people don't, but the 2% is just too high, because once Russia is defeated, there is no other military power which is going to attack Europe.
I'm sure one will crop up somewhere,
But I mean, there's no one from Africa, no one from the Americas, no one from Asia, except, and China's not going to invade one country and avoid the rest of them. So I mean, I think we can have a viable military and defense budget which is smaller than we're paying now, because we don't need to be paying so much, and I think something which isn't some kind of, you know, a joke, or what would be for many people a joke. So I think that's certainly and with something we can afford, and it would be there, and I think we'd actually save some money, and actually we'd have jobs here in Wales. So Wales isn't just a place to go yomping and practice. There would be a career structure within the Welsh military, which doesn't happen at the moment. So maybe the other thing, so you talk about, you know, big expenditures, so military is one of them. And then of course the other one then is pensions. So I mean, what you're saying, that just so people can, we just to summarize, essentially the money raised in Wales pays for the services we use day to day, even with a bit over, but let's say the same. So that's sorted. Then there's other expenditure, which is more difficult to work out, also because there aren't correct figures just for Wales, but there's military, which we can have, we can sustain, you know, even by paying less than we do at the moment. And then the other big one, of course, as you mentioned, is pension. So let's get into this. So the big argument, David, you know, Wales has an aging population, which actually, there seems to be almost a policy of attracting aging people to Wales, which is another thing, and exporting young people outside, so Cardiff and the south and the M4 corridor there. How do we support, one, the pensions which people are paying, and then have an economy then which deals with an aging population, which by definition means less people of working age to create them? Because, as you know, we're all paying money, you know, to the pension pot, but essentially it's how the economy looks when you're 67 years old. If the economy is going tits up, then there's no one complaining about your 40 years of pension paid. So let's deal with pension. So how can do we pay for that, and how is that paid for, and how would we sort that out?
Sure. So just before I forget, you said something about NATO. Just on the NATO question, NATO guidelines is 2% of GDP spent on defence. However, there's only actually there's only three members of NATO that actually pay 2%.
Yes.
So, everyone else pays less, including Germany and France. Yeah. So, you know, that it's not an absolute necessity. So pensions, as people will see from the video that was done with John Ball, and in the analysis from John Doyle, the amount of pensions that are paid, or the amount of money that is paid to Welsh pensioners, whether that's in the state pension or whether that is like public services pensions, so teachers and nurses, etc. It comes to roughly about 9 billion. That's the number to put the pin in the wall, is 9 billion. With those pensions and all of those people that are earning pensions now, I just want to echo what John Ball says. There's absolutely no reason why anybody should be worried about pensions being given, about pensions continuing to them after Wales becomes independent. And there's plenty of evidence to suggest why this is the case. One, people in Ireland. So Ireland and the UK have a reciprocal pension agreement. It was signed in 2017 or 2018, something like that, after Brexit anyway, just to say we will renew this commitment. And if you are an Irish person, born in Ireland, raised in Ireland, everything else, worked in Ireland all your life, and you move to the UK, anywhere in the UK, north of Ireland or Scotland, Wales, England, you will receive your pension from the UK government rather than the Irish government. So it's a reciprocal agreement that goes on there. Exactly the same if you were somebody who's worked your entire life in the UK and you decide to, well, before Brexit happened and you had to come back, but you decide to retire to Spain.
Yes.
Your pension would be paid for by the UK government. It wouldn't be paid for by the Spanish government because you wouldn't meet their criteria to start meeting the pension. I think you have to work there for about 15 years before you can receive a state pension. So in that, there are millions of examples of individual people who do not live in England anymore. And if we're saying that England is the UK in this instance after Wales has left, although it's not really they've got a king now and it's kind of been split up, but you know, if we say that England is the UK, there's no reason to say why the UK Treasury would not be paying your pensions, whether those are state sector pensions or whether they're or whether they're, you know, just standard state pensions.
Yes.
Coming on to the question of can Wales afford to have pensioners? Yes. But the thing is over the years, when pensions actually started, sort of somewhere, I'm thinking 19th century, maybe?
Well, Lloyd George bought them in 1909. That was the state pension. So
yeah. So we're only talking about 100 years. So before that, people had to either save up but the UK wouldn't have had a pension pot to pay into. So they would have been starting from nothing, effectively. And Wales are not doing too dissimilar a thing. However, all the pensioners that live in Wales now would still receive their pensions from the UK government. Yeah. So we would immediately start building up a pension pot for the people who would then over the years retire. And the more they work in Wales, the more they pay in, the higher percentage that they'll receive from the Welsh pension pot rather than the UK pension pot.
Yeah.
There's no reason why that wouldn't work the way it does. It works a similar way in the Czech Republic for people who worked in, it's mainly Slovakia it works in, because people in the Czech Republic, they still had their own central bank. Slovakia had to set up their own central bank when they decided is it the Velvet Divorce?
The Velvet Divorce, like So Czech Republic is the successor state, essentially.
Yeah,
we're assuming that England would be a successor state to the UK.
Yeah. So, sorry, just getting a reminder come up on my screen. That's not useful. People in Slovakia receive, this was something that was discussed during the Scottish independence referendum, but there are people who are old enough to have worked in Czechoslovakia who have now retired in Slovakia, and they get part of their pension from the Czech central bank and part of their pension from the Slovak central bank, depending on how much they worked in those countries they existed at the time.
And as I said, during the Scottish referendum,
It was
confirmed by the UK government and the Bank of England that there would be no danger, whatever the press was saying, to pensioners in Scotland. So that was actually made explicit because it was asked. But most of the press sort of ignored that and carried on with scare stories.
That really is Project Fear, you know, from the people who were willing to shout Project Fear about anything.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's just a fact that, you know, Irish people receive pensions from the UK if they've worked a little of their life in the UK, because there's a reciprocal agreement there. There's no reason why a similar reciprocal agreement couldn't be brought into place between the rest of the UK or England, as it may be, and an independent Wales.
And then it's also the case, I mean, a lot of people have a combination of state pension and, you know, maybe the work pension and a private pension. And, you know, the private companies, they're not going to change things because Wales becomes independent, mostly transnational. And it's just another, it's something to deal with.
Yeah.
So the pensions, I think it's fairly simple to answer. The question then, of course, is, as we alluded to, is an aging population. So this is a pan-European issue. Not just Wales, every country in Europe, a huge issue in Eastern Europe. I think we need to look at policies to make it easier for people to have children, to have that maybe third child, because it's something we need to invest in and need to be sensitive and, you know, innovative in that, because this is literally our future. But how do we deal with so outside Cardiff, essentially, maybe sort of Wrexham area, Cardiff, Newport, Bridgend, you know, there is an aging population. So how does the Welsh economy deal with that? Because, you know, the problem isn't so much the pensioners, you've got people who worked fine, but there's a top heavy then, you know, there's fewer as a percentage people of working age. So how would independent Wales deal with that? Or do we need to deal with that? Well, we need to deal it beforehand in any case, I think, but how would we deal with that, do you think?
I think the ideas about making policies that help people with childcare, for instance, are a good idea. Just simply because it's always, you know, with the growth of everything, as inflation happens, as, you know, countries grow, populations grow. So yes, you know, from my personal perspective, I think it should be. I don't have any children myself at the moment. They are, I guess, planned to a certain extent. however, I live in England, and my wife is English. So that means that my children will be fiercely Welsh, just like I am. But I think when it comes to trying to increase birth rates and things like that, I can understand that's a very good idea for a long-term policy. Yeah. Because increasing the birth rate now, fine, great, you know, and trying to, however long it would take to the number of years to bring that legislation in and for it to take hold and people to go, oh, okay, actually, yeah, we'll have a kid. Yeah. So yeah, you're talking 20 years, at least 20, 25 years in the future, to have that kind of investment, if you see what I mean, in people come through. One of the things that you know, we've got these issues now, and we need to deal with these issues now. We can't wait 25 years for that. You know, this isn't a Brexit solution where we finally find the benefits of it in 50 years' time, Jacob Rees-Mogg. Yeah. But one of the things that we need to lean into, I think, is that Wales is a nation of sanctuary. There are people out there in the world who are displaced, and they have incredible skills. They have, they're doctors, they're nurses. They are teenagers, young people who can be trained. A lot of them already speak English. And if they speak English, that means they've got an ability to learn a second language, because chances are that won't be their first language. Hmm. There's no reason why they can't learn Welsh on the job as needed to. We need to make it easier for people for young people already in Wales to get into apprenticeships, into technical things. I'm on an apprenticeship now. I'm 34, but I'm on an apprenticeship now, and I started it when I was 28. And actually, you know, it's one of the things that, you know, dare I say it, the Westminster government, started to put more of a focus on apprenticeships. Yeah. And that's a good thing. And I think there needs to be more. And I think Wales can do more as well, especially when we've got, you know, we're one of the most renewable energy source rich countries in the world, you know, certainly per square mile.
Yeah.
And you know, there's no reason why there can't be, why we can't see a second boom in, you know, manufacturing in Wales to support the energy sector. Yes, that needs more people. Yes, that needs technical specialists, and that needs people who've got their expertise to potentially come to Wales and, you know, have a good life invest in Wales and invest in the economy here. You know, I know there will be people sort of perhaps looking at this now who are hesitant to have higher immigration into Wales. But what I want to say is Wales is one of the least densely populated countries in the whole of Europe. And like you say, we have an aging population, and we need to make ourselves more attractive to people who have got those technical abilities. The way we do that is by making our way of life better. So in order to make us more attractive means the people in Wales will end up with a better way of life, because that is the attraction. People from, say, India or, you know, Southeast Asia, or even China, Hong Kong, places like that, who have got historical colonial connections as well to what is the UK now, And you know, are taught English at school in most of those places. We need to make it more attractive for them to come come here. You know, Brexit made the whole of the UK really unattractive to go to come to. The only part of the UK that is attractive to go to is Northern Ireland, because they're in the single market and they're in the customs union and they're also in the UK and they speak English and they use the pound and yada, yada, yada. They've got a lot of good things going for them, Northern Ireland.
Yeah, it's just quite interesting because
we need to have that sort of thing as well. We need to make Wales more attractive to people. And I feel like we're only going to do that if we're given the opportunity to actually take the control of Wales. We take the reins over from any kind of Secretary of State or Viceroy or whatever it is in the UK.
Well, I think these are points raised in the Melin Drafod economics paper, which is make Wales a more attractive place to raise children. So it's easier, you know, money towards a third child, not just a second as in the UK at the moment, but you know, but also a safe, a pleasant place to live. And then they're advocating also, you know, as you say, maybe trying to accommodate people who are maybe refugees who have skills or upskilling people to contribute to the workforce. And I think with independence, we can do that on our own terms. So, you know, the real concern about the language, you know, is built into it. So, I mean, that isn't sort of an add-on, we forgot about this Welsh language. So it isn't seen as a threat to the language, which, you know, is it generally is. I mean, there's no point pretending about that. Because the issue we're going to have also, I think, in 10, 20 years' time is the whole world has the same crisis. So the only part of the world which has above reproduction rate is basically Africa and a band across from North Africa to Northern India. It stops there.
Yeah.
So the whole world is going to be looking for younger people essentially to do the work. Yeah. So, I mean, I think we need to look at automation. There's no need for people to do very boring, mind-numbing work. We give those works to robots. You know, why do we need humans doing this? UBI is some kind of way of looking at that. I think it's going to be a fight in the next 20, 30 years across the whole developing world to get young people. And if a country is attractive or you have very high wages, then there's a problem. And there is an issue for Wales. The weather isn't particularly good. There are other parts of the world, you know, you can imagine Portugal offering a very nice, or Italy offering a really nice place to live. I know watching YouTube, a lot of people are maybe looking at somewhere like Denmark, which has rubbish weather, but excellent, you know, place to raise children.
Yeah.
That's the kind of thing.
Yeah.
Now, Finland is now advocating, you know, trying to appeal to tech nomads or whoever to settle down in Finland. Even Estonia is doing this. So, I mean, if the quality of life isn't there, then maybe you can attract some people with very high wages and very low taxes, which is basically has been the US model. But I think maybe there's only so much I don't think Wales can compete with that, with everything. So we need to look at exactly the kind of country we're building to make it more attractive to attract people, but also I think to keep people here. At the moment, the Welsh government is actively promoting people to leave Wales. And I think there's a feeling within some sections of civil service in Wales and the Welsh government, the Labour government, that essentially Wales is for losers. And getting out of Wales is a sign of success, you know. And if you're a teacher in London, then it's more successful than being a teacher in Bridgend or something, you know, that kind of mentality.
Well, I mean, just on that, you know, I've got experience in education myself. London is basically like its own country within the UK itself, simply because the starting rate for a teacher, the amount of salary that you get as a teacher starting in London is, I don't know exactly what it is now, but I think when I started, it was somewhere between £6,000 and £8,000 more per year.
Oh, yeah, and this
just
isn't
because
locked
you teach
in,
at a school in this geographic location.
Yes, and it's
madness,
this isn't,
really.
No, it's not knocking London either. I mean, it's just saying I think there is a mentality still in Wales that if you're working in a bank in Swansea is not as successful as working in a bank in, I don't know, Birmingham or something. So I think there is that kind of feeling. If you've left Wales, then you're somehow more successful. So I think we need to get rid of that.
I live near Birmingham, and trust me, I'd probably rather live near Swansea.
Well, fact, I think there's
it's not, you know, it's nothing to write home about. But I think with independence comes our own choice and our own destiny and our own decisions about how we promote ourselves, how we promote the country, and who we attract. You know, it doesn't necessarily have to be low taxes and things like that, especially when, you know, that yes, there is that US model, but the US has got the you know, 330 odd million people, so they've always got a population that they can rely on, and a large population of people who want to get into the US by any means necessary. So I think, you know, really we need to be looking at who are our, you know, what are our benefits, what are our assets that we've got, and who's our competition. So in Wales, although it is a bilingual nation and we want to work towards that, people speak English. So that's a good thing, because, you know, it's a global language and a lot of people are learning English around the world to go to America. And if they don't want to go to America because, I don't know, they've got guns they elect people like Trump.
But people are looking at the quality of life now. It's not sustaining, I think.
So there's that. We speak English. We've got an overabundance of two of the most important global resources, and they're only going to become more and more important as the years go on, and that is water and energy. There's, you know, if we become, you know, we're already exporting water to England. England won't survive without our water. So any kind of trade or anything that goes on there, Wales has got what it needs. And the same with energy as well. You know, there's no reason why we can't keep building a higher and higher surplus of energy, because there are customers across England, not so much Scotland because they've got their own surplus of it, but across Europe as well, who are looking for clean energy. And once we've got energy, there's no reason why that energy can't then be turned into our own industry and our own technical specialisms and our own, you know, research and development. I know a lot of people, there's this idea of, you know, Silicon Valley on Thames and things like that, and trying to make something the new Silicon Valley. I mean, we've already got the valleys, but there's no reason why we can't turn it to our own thing. We could look at semiconductor, ways around semiconductor shortages. We could look at, you know, it just takes people. Once you've got a clean piece of paper, you go, right, what's Wales going to be? You know, we're independent. What's Wales going to be? What is it that we want to focus on? Oh, we could look at this. There's a shortage of this. There's a shortage of that. And you build your economy to work into that and to move into that, and more generally as well. But, you know, when it comes to energy, we're the fourth largest net exporter of energy already in the world. And water as well. We export such a huge amount of it compared with what we actually use.
Well, and it's not just water to drink or for agriculture. It's water as an energy. And I'm hoping to get Gita Owen on the podcast soon to discuss this, which is a very exciting field, which, again, Wales should be leading on. Ireland is looking on it. Already looking at exporting that energy, and Wales again is missing a boat because we don't have independence. And I think one big plus for me for independence is it forces people in Wales and the Welsh Government to actually think of what we have. So there's still a mentality in Wales with, you know, the British or the Labour government that, you know, we don't have to worry about that because we get money from London. So still an idea, we get in money from London. So there's almost this fallback, it's almost a lazy way of dealing with stuff. You know, independence forces it to look at what we have and how to develop that and to invest in Wales. You know, so there's no more investing in HS2. We have to invest in Wales to get what we want. And it's a small enough country, as Adam Price said in paper, he has the flotilla effect came about 10 years ago in the economy. Yeah. You know, small countries can ride the waves and adapt very quickly. And I think that's what we saw with COVID, was because Wales is so small, the Welsh government working with local councils and everyone could get things up and running very, very quickly. And that's something which larger companies, which do also have benefits, and there's also benefit of being part of a large country. But I mean, a smaller country, I think, is better adapted. And this is why I think the quality of life very often is better in smaller countries as well, which goes with it. We've discussed loads of stuff. So I think, so basically pensions are sorted. Defence is sorted. The money we raise is basically what we spend here in Wales. We have an abundance of energy. We need to have a policy which takes into account demography, because all politics is demography in the end. So attracting people here, keeping them here, but keeping our younger people and making it a better place for people to have more children to look into the future. Then the big thing then we discussed is, again, with John Ball, and you've had this in various pubs and everywhere, and you discussed in one of your videos as well, I think, is, you know, a central bank and the currency. So this is a big thing, the big elephant which is discussed. And, you know, so John Ball's, Dr. John Ball's feeling was that Wales couldn't have or shouldn't have its own independent currency, stick with sterling. Now, we'll use a caveat, all countries going independent for the first 6-18 months, maybe 2 years, even longer than many of them, they stay with the old currency, you know, because you don't switch over the day after. Nobody does that. That's just stupid. So you always have the old currency for a few months, a few years in any case. So leaving that aside, so, well, I think when people say we want an independent currency, you're looking at an independent currency, you know, 6 months, 12 months down the line. So John Ball was of the view that Wales couldn't hold its own currency, that no one would hold it until the economy has proven itself, and maybe, yes, in 10 years' time, whatever, that's something you can look at if you wanted. So what's your view, Dav Smith, on a currency? A Welsh pound, sterling, euro,
Bitcoin? It's got to be, you know, 100 Welsh Davs to an O-line, to a Glyndwr or something like that. So the great thing about currencies and this question getting asked is it's one that gets thrown. It was arguably one of the reasons why the Scottish referendum didn't go the way that it didn't go the way they did.
Are they looking now at having an independent Scottish pound? This seems to be the consensus I'm getting from Scotland. But you carry on, sorry, Dave.
Yeah. It's quite an easy one that we can look back through history and just see other examples of other countries that have gained independence. Isn't it funny? We always say gained independence rather than lost its ability to be in a union. We never say gained Brexit, do we?
No, that's true.
So what did we gain? A few examples, and I got this from research for a second video that I was going to do, but then I ended up getting sidetracked by other things. So firstly, I'm going to use Malta as an example.
Okay.
So Malta gains its independence in 1966 or 67, I think. When it gains its independence, it's using the British pound as its currency. It continues to use the British pound as its currency. It doesn't even create its own central bank until after it's gained its independence, which is a strange way around to do it. That's not the norm. So it gains its central bank in about 1968, 1969, something like that. It continues to use British pounds as its currency, but it prints them so that the pictures are different. It'll be the, you know, Maltese, whatever, you know, the cross of Malta will be on rather than other things, but it's still the British pound. Over the next sort of 8 years while they're independent, they are very cleverly keeping back and holding in their central bank various other currencies, strong global currencies around the world. So British pound, which they had access to plenty of it, US dollar, German mark, as it was then, and you know, other currencies that would have been strong then. So what they do is they create this basket effectively of currencies, and when they're ready, when they feel like they're ready, they decide that using the basket of currencies that they've already got as their capital, basically, they're going to then peg their currency, their new Maltese lira, to that basket of currencies. Because of the strength of that, pretty much overnight, the Maltese lira, as soon as it comes in, becomes near enough the strongest currency in the world. Now, there's good things and bad things about having an extremely strong currency in terms of imports and exports and how attractive your country looks from the outside. However, that Maltese lira continued to be in use and continued its relatively high strength to every other currency in the world, especially against the pound. I don't think there was any point where the pound was stronger than the lira since it came in. So, and that continued until, I think, 2010, 2011, when they decided to adopt the euro for convenience, economic reasons. Yeah, fine. So there's already in there a template for what Wales could do.
And this is
a template that can be changed. Different things can happen in different orders. For example, you've got Croatia as well. When it left Yugoslavia, it created its central bank before it became an independent nation. You know, it already had ideas that it was going to, but it decided to create a special Croat central bank and printing its own money. And then before it gained its independence, it decided to use to transition to what was called then a transitionary currency. So it went from being the Yugoslav dinar to a Croatian dinar. And then they decided to change from that to something else.
To kuna.
To the kuna, which they had then. And now as of 2023, they use the euro. So, and this isn't to say that I think Wales will end up using the euro. Wales can do whatever it likes. But the point is that at the independence stage, there are lots of different routes that countries can go down. And there's so many successful cases where this has happened. You know, I've just given two, but you could also say Latvia in 1992 is also a really interesting case. But the first thing, and I would say the most important thing that Wales needs is Wales needs a central bank. It needs a central bank set up, and it needs to be officially recognised as a central bank in the same way that the central bank of the Ulster Bank and the Bank of Scotland is. And you know, the only reason we don't have one is Wales was the first colony. It was conquered in 1282, 1283. And back then, banking wasn't really a big thing. It was more running around.
Banking was started, essentially modern banking was started in those wars against Welsh independence by Edward I, because he lent so much money from Italian bankers that essentially started international banking to pay off his wars against Wales and then against Scotland. So, you know, we played a part in international banking, but just we didn't get our own bank.
But there's nothing stopping us from creating that bank, from creating a central bank now. And really, in my opinion, and it really does come down to one's word over another, but there's no reason that the UK government could give to say, oh no, you can't have that, because Scotland has it and Ulster has it. And you know, and various other countries, you know, every other country in Europe that is in the euro has its own central bank.
Yeah, so this is a point to me, because this is the argument going in Scotland. You listen to the very interesting discussion I had with Robin McAlpine of Commonweal.
Yeah.
And he's talking in the Swansea rally on Saturday. And he said,
Make sure you come.
Yes,
make sure you come.
It'd be fantastic.
Everybody, come to the Swansea rally.
So, I mean, what he was saying, he was adamant that Scotland needs to have its own currency, because then you're not at the whims of another government, but also how do you pay for something like COVID, he felt, unless you're able to print your own money, which is quantitative easing. So the question then is, you know, and John Bowe was in favor of a central bank, but you know, keeping with sterling, that was his feeling, certainly in the short to medium term. So you'd sort of agree with that, keeping sterling but having an own central bank, or you'd look at an own currency, or
I think you know, realistically looking at this, we would have to stay with sterling in the short term, whether that's 2 years, whether it's the 8 years like Malta did, whether it's however long it is, we would need to stick with sterling, and that would be the way it would stay. Change is always something that people are apprehensive of. We want to make sure that those pensions and those pensioners in Wales are comfortable with still receiving their pensions in pounds. I think that's important to do as well. After that, I think if Wales has got an economy that, is good enough on its own, we're outward facing, internationalist, and we've got the kind of economy that Ireland has now, I think it's something that should be revisited, simply because, you know, and I agree with Robin McAlpine. I think, you know, there is a sense that And the argument was made back in 2014 as well, and it has been made since, that why would you leave a monetary union with England just to then join a monetary union that's in another country, in joining the euro, that is. And that's a very good question. Not one that I wouldn't be pro going into having a euro myself, but that's my choice. But I think it's something that, you know, we need to look at it at the time. And if it seems like it would be a benefit to Wales to enable us to, I don't know, set our own interest rates or have our own quantitative easing, and properly financially cut the ties with the UK in terms of currency as well, then I think it's something that should be explored, and I would be for it if as long as the Welsh economy was ticking along and growing well.
Yeah, so that's something which the independence movement needs to look more into. I don't know if Yes Cymru needs to have an answer to that. I think at the moment, getting the three main options out is good. I'm totally agnostic. I would happily use, sterling with king on his head, or euro or Welsh pound, it's then just coming out to what works. I think it's also worth noting, the only time I use currency, cash, is for the laundrette here in Llanbadarn when I need to pound coins, which is really awkward to find then. So, to some extent, the idea of currency isn't what it was. It's not such an emotive thing as it was maybe Jared and Siobhan. The question then does come down to economics and who holds, because economics is basically another posh word for power. Who holds the power? So I think that's an interesting discussion, but we need to have more of. Now, some people, we won't go for 4 minutes left. You're listening to Radio Yes Cymru. I'm talking to Dav Smith. A really interesting conversation about independence and a lot of important stuff. We'll try and wrap up, Dav, with sort of the question we sort of touched on, before we came on here. This idea of, the kind of economy we'll have. And if you have a central bank, some people are talking about MMT, which is modern monetary theory, which basically people just believe in the money and can essentially print it. But I think a lot of people are feeling you need to have something behind it. And the Welsh economy would have that in terms of some very serious, solid stuff, which is things like water. These you either have water or you don't.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's not transferable. It is like gold or gold. It's either with you or it's not. So, I think that gives the Welsh economy a very solid base, more solid than a lot of independent countries now, which are doing very well.
Yes, I agree. I think Wales is a country that has 800 years worth of unlocked, 750 odd years of unlocked potential.
Yeah.
Or locked potential.
Yes.
When the first industrial revolution came around, and all of a sudden we found out that Welsh coal was some of the best coal, or most potent coal in the world. Britain was selling off the coal that it was digging up out of Yorkshire and other places around the country because they wanted to use the best, and they wanted to use Welsh coal. Now, in exactly the same way, Wales has got similar assets now. We've got energy, we've got wind, we've got a climate that enables us to have just an overstock of renewable energy.
Yeah,
we can go into tidal. We've got the second largest tidal difference estuary with tidal difference in the world. The only other one that's larger is Canada. There's so much potential that Wales has that can be unlocked. But the key thing that is in the way is not, and is nowhere near ever going to be, can Wales afford this new infrastructure? Can we afford new trains? Can we afford to give our pensioners a good life? Can we afford UBI? That's not the question, and it shouldn't really be the question anymore, because all of those things would probably have happened in Wales over the last 50 years, especially with the closure of the mines. There would have been a government in Wales who would have gone, right, okay, yeah, we're closing these mines because we have to. But what we're going to do is we're going to invest in this industry, which where you can, you people, you miners and miners family, and then move into. Wouldn't have needed the riots, wouldn't have needed all of this massive inequality and essentially ghost towns. But it's who is in charge of us that has always been the issue. And it's still the issue now.
Yeah.
All of can get unlocked as soon as we're independent.
You look at the situation with Luxembourg, which is essentially the same size as Gwent in terms of population.
Yeah.
And had a coal and steel, very, very similar to Gwent in terms of profile, or coal and steel, and some agricultural hinterland. Same, but Luxembourg is now the richest country in Europe. No, Luxembourg is also a small country, again, which sort of proves a point, and it's made itself as a slightly dodgy, at times, banking sector. So that's not something I would necessarily want to go for. But they've been able to do that because they're independent. And if you go to the border of Luxembourg in Belgium, isn't quite as successful. So, I mean,
exactly. Yeah. It's the second poorest region of when they did the study of back when we were in the EU of poorest regions in Europe, as that famous map of it. Nine of them were in the UK. One of the highest one was in Wales, West Wales. Yeah. And the only other one was Hainaut in southern Belgium, which is literally just up the road. It's less than an hour's drive from Luxembourg to Hainaut. So
independence works. I mean, the reason Wales is poor is because we got poor thinking.
Yes.
And poor thinking is thinking Westminster will sort it out, because it doesn't, because it doesn't have to. And
poor thinking and poor governance from those who actually hold the power.
Yeah, exactly. Because the driving force for Westminster thinking, whichever political party, is, you know, how can I get a better job in Westminster? And getting a better job in Westminster, and it comes down to egos, is about not rocking the boat and not going native and being awkward. So you don't be awkward. You swallow your pill and accept it, and accept that Wales doesn't. Don't make a fuss for Wales, and then you get you get your little ministerial car and your little bag and your nice silk socks.
Little red box.
Yeah, and unfortunately, that's the caliber of a lot of the MPs which we've sent to Westminster over the centuries. Dal Smith, it's been an absolute pleasure to speak to you.
Thank you very much for having me. Pleasure as well.
No problem. A lot of chunky things discussed on the Radio Yes Company podcast. Remember to follow us on your usual podcast platforms. We're all on Spotify and other stuff you use, but also on YouTube if you want to watch us. adult content only, which is down there on the Yes Company YouTube channel, and also a link from the Yes Cymru central website, yes.cymru. Dal Smith, I look forward to seeing you on the Independence March this Saturday in Swansea.
Yeah, Can I also do a bit of a shout out as I put on my Yes Cymru director's hat on.
Yeah.
We've got the summer conference coming up in around your neck of the woods in Aberystwyth. Yes. Really, really good speakers that we've got on there, and loads of great workshops for people who want to learn how to convince other people and to campaign for an independent Wales. Yes Cymru is a grassroots organisation, and we need people at the grassroots who can do a good job and make the case and make the arguments for us. So, yeah, if you're interested in coming along to that, then
and that's in June or July, I forget.
It is in June. Yeah,
Here in Aberystwyth. And you know, we're also having, you know, we're open to discussions, conversations, and hope Radio Yes Cymru is playing a part in that. Hopefully, which I hope people respect has been quite an open conversation. We haven't tried to say everything's been great. We've actually discussed the nitty gritty of things. Dal Smith, once again, thanks a lot for making time. I'm Sean Jobbins. This is Radio Yes Cymru. Until the next time, look after yourself, and every step is a step towards independence.
Yeah. Hwyl fawr.
Croeso.
Yes Cymru Radio.